This is Biff Bradford from Saxon. You're listening to the Classic Rock and Metal Podcast. Yeah.
Yes, you are. And if you were also listening to rock and heavy metal in the 70s and 80s, and maybe the 90s, and have even the slightest interest in what those bands are doing now, then this is for you. Be surprised to know that most of the bands you knew and loved are still around, and many are releasing new material. Not only that, but recently a whole bunch of new bands have surfaced to join in the fun and revel in the resurgence of good old-fashioned heavy rock. Coming up, there's a roundup of all the news, plus more from Biff on festivals, the new Saxon DVD and his Scalextric. We have a stadium rock band from the 80s who've released their new album in 2010, 25 years after it was recorded. We'll tell you how Black Sabbath can now get your kids off to sleep, and we'll be talking to new boys the Black Spiders on how they're hoping an industrial accident can get them on Aussie's support bill.
I think it's going to be the fitting tribute to probably the best singer in rock, Ronnie James Dio. Obviously died too young, and for me he was the voice of Rainbow, Black Sabbath.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to be emotional, yeah.
And a good tribute and a good send-off to the one and only Ronnie James Dio.
They're talking, of course, about the last ever performance of Heaven and Hell, the renamed Black Sabbath lineup, which featured Ronnie Dio and Vinny Appice, as well as originals Geezer Butler and Tony Iommi. Dio, of course, died in May from stomach cancer, and this show at the High Voltage Festival on July 24th was their emotional tribute to him and a chance for everyone else to celebrate his life. Vocals were handled on the day by Glenn Hughes and Jorn Lander, and it was indeed a fitting send-off for one of heavy metal's best-loved and most talented performers. Jorn Lander has released an album of mostly covers entitled simply Dio, and the one original track on that record is this. It's called A Song for Ronnie James.
There's a voice in the world for the lonely. There's a fire in the heart of the king. And the broken ones will know they are not the only. When he starts to I turn to face the sun when pain is calling. My mind is on the run, another angel falling.
Oh, ocean.
Also on at High Voltage were one of my personal favourites, Saxon, still going strong, had a fantastic album out last year, Into the Labyrinth, and I've got a new DVD out, a documentary package with tons and tons of stuff on it. In fact, I couldn't find a decent list of everything that was on it, so I caught up with Biff and asked him if he could sum it up for us.
Well, really, people have to buy it. It's too big to talk about, really. I mean, it's got old members in, it's a bit sad, a bit happy, you know. Actually, it's pretty good, actually. Pretty good. I mean, Lars Ulrich sent me a message. We sent him one. He loves it. So if he loves it, I'm all right by me.
I read that you specifically wanted to include some footage of Download 2008. What was so significant about that gig for you?
Well, I think for Britain, that was it. And for our agent, Steve, who got us on there, it was quite a big turning point in our profile in Britain, really. I think it just cemented it all. It just happened at the right time. Donington, the first one we played that tent. You know, we were given the gig as a bit of a favour, really. You know, and it turned out to be fantastic. So, you know, that's why I wanted it on. And we only had a bootleg from somebody in the audience, telephone, so that's all we had.
You've played a good number of festivals over the years. Obviously, the first sponsors are Rock and a lot since, a lot in recent years. Do you still get the same buzz getting out, you know, in front of those
big... these festivals like this, they're quite nerve-wracking. You can be quite nervous before you go on. Because, you know, the gear, does it work? You know, you only have so many minutes to get it ready. So it's all about that, really. It's all about the logistics of playing the gig on festivals, you know.
Do you come across or listen to any of the new bands, anybody in particular?
I like quite a few of the newer stuff, really. You know, I like Black Spiders and, a few of the bands I've seen around. The more great British bands they are, you know, that are under 30, the better for me. Yeah. You know, I think it's cool.
So many of the 80s bands are still around, have always been around, or are coming
or
getting back together. Is it because you guys just wrote great songs that people remember?
I think a lot of it's down to the songs of the 80s for everybody. You know, that goes for everybody that was big in those days. I think the songs, you know, for some reason were great. Don't ask me why, it's just a state of grace in that period of time.
Have you still got a scale X-Trick, and did you ever make the switch to digital?
Hey, my four children are here, they're boys, like so. Yeah, we've made the switch to digital. We've got three Ferraris and three Porsches.
This is the Classic Rock and Metal Podcast.
Ozzy Osbourne's travelling festival, the Ozfest, is back in the UK on September the 17th at the O2 Arena with Korn, Murder Dolls and Skindred on the bill. Metal Hammer putting this one on. Steel Panther, the 80s hairstyle spoof rockers, have just been added to the bill. More about that later on. And if you want a really exciting and unique way to tie the knot this summer, you can do it with the Unholy Matrimony package for Ozfest. As with other wedding packages, this one-stop Unholy Matrimony package provides just about everything the happy couple will need, except a marriage license, apparently. Each special package includes a variety of items to mark the special day and 10 general admission pit tickets for the bride and groom and 8 guests, an official Ozfest wedding ceremony by ordained minister Ozfest's MC Big Dave, an Ozfest cake and champagne toast. In addition, all 10 guests will get early entry into the venue with an exclusive pre-show backstage tour hosted by Big Dave. I'd like to see you try and get that one past your betrothed. Good luck with that, fellas. Still with Ozzy, he claims he never understood why Iron Maiden frontman Bruce Dickinson fell out with him. You may remember there was a big old spat a few years ago which resulted in Sharon, Ozzy's wife, arranging for eggs to be thrown at Iron Maiden while they were playing the Ozfest show, apparently with Dickinson having bad-mouthed Ozzy while on stage. Ozzy said, unbeknown to me, every night he was going on stage slagging me off, and that wasn't fair. If he didn't like the effing tour, he should have said, I'm jumping the effing tour. But to go on stage and effing slag me off for no reason, I've never said an effing bad thing to him. So Ozzy doesn't really seem to know what it was all about. Now, Bruce has been having a go at ticket prices. Iron Maiden are obviously out on the Final Frontier tour, and Bruce has been saying it's a massive commitment to come and see a band. They deserve not just a great show, but a reasonable ticket price. Other people have inflated ticket prices to obscene levels, and it's just not right. It's a rock and roll show, not a cash cow. I guess responding to some of the very large ticket prices by certain American bands that did residencies at the O2 earlier on this summer. But in terms of giving fans what they want, Iron Maiden have not gone into trouble, but they've had a bit of a problem on the tour from some fans because they've not played much from the new album because it's not out until the middle of August, and they've only got 4 tracks, I think, on the set list from the old stuff, Iron Maiden, Number of the Beast and Running Free and one other, I think, and the rest of it is from the last 3 or 4 albums. So I think their reasoning was that they did the Somewhere Back in Time tour and played all the stuff from the 80s, so seeing as they're going out again, they're not going to do all that stuff. Now, whether this was prompted by what Iron Maiden have done or not, but Kiss have just set out on tour in the US, having already played in Europe back in April, May, and Paul Stanley's been having a go at bands who said that they're fed up of playing the old material. Year after year, he's saying, look, these are great songs. On top of that, you've got to respect the audience. When somebody comes to a concert and pays hard earned money, they don't deserve to hear a band turn Love Gun into a reggae tune. If a band is bored with their own material, maybe they should stay at home. We're proud of every song. Still with Kiss, their original manager, Bill Aucoin, died at the end of June from complications with prostate cancer. He was one of the reasons that Kiss became so flamboyant. He really pushed them to do more with the image and did an awful lot. He basically financed the first tour on his credit card and with them right up until the sort of 1980 time, when they had a disagreement, I think, over the Peter Chris, letting Peter Chris go, and they went their separate ways. Talking of money-making machines, AC/DC have finally finished the Black Ice World Tour, which seems to have been going on forever, and it's now the second highest grossing tour in history. They played 168 shows to 4.9 million people, grossing $441.5 million. It was just the Bigger Bang Tour that the Stones did in 2005 that did more than that. Now it's 30 years since Back in Black was released, and most of these facts people will know, but just to remind you, it's obviously the biggest selling album by any Australian artist. It's the second biggest selling original album of all time. Only Thriller by Michael Jackson sold more. It's the biggest selling album released by a band. Sales estimated so far at around 35 million copies worldwide, so it was certified platinum 22 times in the US. Richie Blackmore is a father again at the ripe old age of 65. He and his wife Candice Knight, who sings in Blackmore's Night, which is Richie's band of the moment, have a daughter that they've named Autumn Esmeralda. And on the same subject, i.e. Richie Blackmore's offspring, you may or may not know that Jürgen Blackmore, Richie's son, who himself I think is in his early 40s, has been doing the rounds with a band called Over the Rainbow, which is made up of former members of Rainbow, playing Rainbow covers, and I think still includes Jolene Turner, Bobby Rondinelli, Greg Smith, and Paul Morris. You can check them out on MySpace. They've got a couple of YouTube videos which are well worth a look. Now, this has got everybody's lips nice and wet. Alice Cooper is working with Bob Ezrin again on a new album. It's the 35th anniversary of Welcome to My Nightmare. And he's been talking about rounding the old boys up again. Dennis Dunaway, the original bass player, recently said that him and Neil Smith, the drummer, are going to be working on it. And I think he was trying to get hold of Steve Hunter and Dick Wagner as well. So we'll wait to see what that turns out like. Okay, we're going to listen to some new music now. This is a band called The Black Spiders. They've been around for a little while, and if you've been to any of the summer festivals, you may have seen them already. Let's give it a listen, and then we'll see what they've got to say for themselves. Hands up, gather round. There's a brand new force in town. There's no rivals. Bruce Grant, you clowns, has the power to bring you down. There's no rivals. In the rain, on the ground, there's no mercy to be found. There's no mercy.
one horse town.
That was Stay Down from their EP Cinco Hombres. We caught up with them after their set on the Metal Hammer stage at the recent High Voltage Festival in London, and I asked them who they were, what they were all about, and why we should be listening to them.
Well, the Black Spiders are a rock and roll band. You know, we're influenced by
rock and roll bands.
Basically, we represent the area of rock that makes it sound like it should sound.
It sounds like the Brown sound.
Yeah, we've got a lot of Brown sound going on.
We came about due to a friend's passing, so we did a tribute gig for his death, and then it kind of just grew on from there. Like, friends, we're all friends from various walks of life, so we came together and just started playing, just jamming and enjoying it, and then it kind of grew. We kind of not thought about trying to be serious. We'd given up on all of that. I mean, we were just having a laugh, and then all of a sudden it just kind of, it's grown.
There's a lot of familiar stuff in there for people that were into the 70s and 80s music. Is that intentional, or does it just come through?
No, it's what we listen to. I think we are the, I'll say this, it's only my thought, we are the new wave of British heavy metal, because we love the original stuff. Obviously you've got Sabbath and Zeppelin, then you move on and you've just got all the bands coming through.
So how was it out there today then? I mean, it's a big old place.
It is, it really is. And actually, we were expecting one or two lines of people, and thankfully we walked out and there was a lot of people, and more people came and stayed, and some people sang along.
It's amazing. I mean obviously every time you play in a festival, I mean, we're not really a particularly well-known band in my head, and to have anybody turn up at all is just a bonus, you know. So yeah, awesome. And yeah,
when we were loading the gear on the stage, there was about six people knocking around. It was like, oh no, it's going to be another one of those. No, we've never had one of those. And then we came out, it's good, and then as we played, people just kept coming in, and it was awesome. Yeah.
So who are you looking forward to seeing play today?
Today, personally, I just watched Orange Goblin for a bit, but then we had to come back over here. Obviously, we're going to go and watch the Heaven and Hell tributes. I want to see ZZ Top. I've seen them before.
Well, I'm gutted we missed Focus. We had to be here talking to you fine people. They've got a song.
They've got a song?
Yeah, Hocus Pocus.
By Focus?
By Focus, yeah. There's yodeling in it. There's flute solo in it. It's everything that you need. And in a good
tick,
classic prog
tick,
all prog rock boxes ticked. So yeah, I mean, I heard it. I wish I'd seen it in real life. yeah, Cathedral, awesome. Really like to see them.
Those Orange Goblin guys, Sean Outer, rock too.
You sound very sincere.
No, I am sincere. I love those dudes.
What are your thoughts on the Heaven and Hell?
Of
tribute.
Course, we were lucky enough to get a support slot with Heaven and Hell, with Dio actually. Unfortunately, it never happened because he got ill and passed away. Obviously, we're influenced by Sabbath, Tony Iommi, all that sort of thing. Shit, yeah.
So, are there any new bands that you like at the moment? You mentioned Orange Goblin up on stage as well.
One new band I like at the moment, they're from Denmark and they're called Volbeat. Personally, that is my, they're like Johnny Cash meets Metallica meets the Misfits. For me, that's a sealed deal. I only got into Volbeat about 6 months ago after some of our fans said we have little things of Volbeat in our sound. So I checked Volbeat out and I've been extremely hooked ever since. Other new bands, obviously, I've been influenced by Airborne because we've been touring with Airborne, and they're just like great guys.
Black Spiders should be on the Ozfest bill instead of Steel Panther, who are a comedy metal band. Discuss.
I'll discuss this because I discovered Steel Panther quite a long time before the UK had even heard of Steel Panther. I was in LA in a small club and Steel Panther were playing. And it was phenomenal. It was like watching, for me it was like, I was never there, but it was like I was back on Sunset Strip in 1988 when I was like knee-high to a grasshopper. There was girls getting up on stage, getting the tits out, and it was just rock and roll. But I would love to be on, we would love to be on Ozfest.
Well, yeah, I mean, any comedy acts, I mean, I suppose they are, yeah, they are.
We're pretty funny.
We think we're funny. We think we're very funny. Obviously, we'd like to play Ozfest if Steel Panther should be pushed down some stairs or have a horrible accident. And obviously, we'll be here to fill their shoes. Not such spangly shoes, but yeah. I mean, obviously, accidents happen. People are cut down. I mean, there's industrial accidents every day. Obviously, there's heavy machinery at rock concerts, and there's obviously people are going to die.
You've got a bit of a reputation, but actually, you're quite a calm person.
I am very, very quiet. I'm just about to go backstage and get my laptop out and read Wikipedia for a couple of hours.
Sounds like a plan.
Okay, and they're on at Sonosphere and Bloodstock and touring with Volbeat in November, December. We'll be covering that also. Okay, here's a tune you'll have heard before, but probably not played like this. Yes, you're right, it was Paranoid by Black Sabbath, but it's one of 14 Sabbath songs transformed into lullabies for the latest in the Rockabye Baby series of CDs designed to put your little angels to sleep. The whole thing was the idea of Lisa Roth, who is Vice President of CMH Records and sister of our very own Diamond Dave Lee Roth, and I asked her what possessed them to try and change stadium rock anthems into nighttime nursery favourites.
The series was created specifically for you, for the parents. Actually, I was shopping for baby shower gift one day, and I wanted to buy something that I would be proud to give and that something the recipient would enjoy thoroughly. And there was really nothing out there that was fun. Transforming the songs of these artists, these rock and roll icons, into lullabies is very difficult. We have a handful of producers that we hire to translate these songs, and then myself and my colleague Leo Flynn and I sit in what we call the listening room, and then we listen to every single note of every song and send back copious notes, and the producer does more revisions, and we can go back and forth on one song for 8 to 10 times. And we have a very specific palette that we use, very specific instruments. We have a list of do's, a list of don'ts, and we really are microscopic about our attention to detail. And what we want to end up with is something that the parent will recognize and love, that maintains the sentiment of the original, but is also soothing for the baby. And it's just not easy. I can't tell you how many times we have to go back and forth to get it recognizable. And my perfect example is Guns N' Roses. That is a heavy-duty, hard-driving rock band. And I swear I laugh every time I listen to it.
Does anybody get nervous about having this done to their music?
No. Actually, we're approached by artists quite often. Steven Tyler wrote the liner notes for our Aerosmith, and we get requests all the time to rockabye a band. I have yet to get a complaint, and I'm going to knock on wood. We have Elvis, we have Pearl Jam coming out in 2010, and Bon Jovi. And then 2011 begins with The Police and Van Halen. We eventually have Weezer and Red Hot Chili Peppers and Jimi Hendrix and Flaming Lips, and I could go on and on.
Okay, a bit more news. Whitesnake have settled with a couple who alleged that they received long-term hearing damage from one of the concerts way back in 2003 on the Nice Package Tour. A concert in Boston, Mary Ellen and Kevin Burns claimed that the staff directed them to new seats, which were closer to the stage because their original view was blocked. And the new seats were closer to the huge tower of speakers, apparently, which in a statement filed in the court said that a hearing loss expert claimed that the speakers had the potential to blast music at a volume anywhere from 2 to 22 times what is considered acceptable exposure to the human ear. They claimed they'd been left with long-term hearing loss as a result of it, and they reached a $40,000 settlement. New or recent releases to check out include that Dio album from Jorn Lander, Bronzes Carried by the Storm, Ozzy Osbourne has Scream, Iron Maiden's Final Frontier, Korn 3, Accept, The Union, Enough's Enough, and John 5 have all got new stuff out. Face Melter is Ryan T's new one, recently released, and we'll be playing something off of that and talking to the guys when they come over to tour in October. Reissues, you've got Little Angels, Tokyo Blade, Angel Witch, Export, Halford, Joan Jett, and there's a Runaways box set. Holy Diver, Ronnie Dio's first solo album, is out on a limited edition red vinyl and also contains an interview. And there's also vinyl versions of Magnum, Judas Priest, Nuclear Assault, Rainbow, Peter Frampton, yes, it's Frampton Comes Alive, Uriah Heep and Twisted Sister, who you can catch headlining Bloodstock Open Air Festival in mid-August. Okay, time to test your memories. Have a listen to this, see if it rings any bells. That, of course, was Send Down an Angel by Bronze, and it reached the top 10 in the UK rock chart and top 20 stateside back in 1983. Today we're talking about something very unusual but perfect for this show, because we want to feature rock and metal bands that were around in the 80s who are releasing new stuff now, and Bronze falls into a surely unique category because they've released an album in 2010 which was actually recorded in 1985. It's called Carried by the Storm, officially the follow-up to their brilliant 1983 debut Taken by Storm, and I spoke to guitarist and founder member Sean Kilpatrick and asked him if he could just talk us through what were extraordinary events that led up to the album being recorded, and tell us why we haven't heard it until now.
We have to go back to when the band was touring in the States back in 84, touring with a band called Rat, who actually at the time were number one with their single Round and Round. We had all sorts of personnel problems within the band due to the pressures of the tour, so we ended up coming back to England to kind of regroup, reform. The other guitarist, Chris Golson, had quit the band, so we weren't a full complement. So we came back to the UK. While we were back over here, Max Bacon was headhunted by Steve Howe and Steve Hackett for the band GTR. So things started to really fall apart. You know, what was a very healthy touring band with a really good, strong first album was suddenly, you know, the fragments of a band. And I ended up being the only original member left. And completely reformed the lineup with a great new lineup. You know, we've got Clive Edwards of UFO, Wild Horses on drums, Mickey O'Donoghue from Grand Prix on guitar, Ian Baker, who was an unknown at that point in time, but a fantastic singer who I was lucky enough to come across, and a bass player called Lee Reddings. And we recorded this album at the Roundhouse as a follow-up to the first album with the producer Max Norman, who, well, he was well known for all the Aussie albums, Bark at the Moon and Megadeth albums and so forth. So we had a fantastic situation. And the record company at that point in time was struggling financially, but we had the backing to go in and record this record. So we spent months in the studio. Well, we spent months in pre-production rehearsals and writing and everything, you know, getting the whole thing ready. Just as we were coming to the end of recording the album, things literally started going missing in the studio. Gear was being taken out. You know, the coffee ceased to be available. The money ran out, basically. Gear was being taken away that was hired. We just never got to the stage where we finished recording, but we'd never actually managed to promote the record because the whole thing collapsed. The record company went bankrupt. All the tapes were taken by the official receiver at that point in time. So the whole thing went into liquidation. Huge financial problems, huge legal problems, contractual problems. It was a bloody nightmare, you know. We ended up buying the masters from the official receiver, so we owned the recordings, you know, and that was it at that point in time. I mean, we all kind of went back to our lives with, you know, got married or whatever, and it just kind of sat on a shelf. As crazy as that sounds, it did. And then a few years later, the bass player, Lee, contracted throat cancer that I thought, well, he never got to hear the album finished. He never got a copy of the album finished. It never got released. So I went into my studio and spent a few months finally editing all the mixes I had and all the various versions of the album and compiled the album to the point where it was a finished master. He was in tears. I mean, Lee was just, he was so emotional to be able to hear the album finished and see it, hold it, you know, whatever, as anybody would be. A few months later, he died. Very, very sad. For all of us. But it suddenly dawned on me that having spent so much time and energy and emotional commitment, why didn't I release this album for real? We spent a fortune making this record. I mean, it was done with the best gear in the best studio with the top engineer. You know, we put a lot of very concentrated effort into making this record. I'm just really glad and proud that we've managed to get out there now.
Well, let's play something from it then, and if you've been waiting 25 years to hear this record, you'd be greeted by this. It's the first track, or side one, track one in Old Money, Can't Live Without Your Love. it broke for you back then? For example, July 1983, I think issue 46 of Kerrang, Michael Schenker on the front, Gary Moore on the back, Malcolm Dome reviewing your Send Down an Angel demo tape. What was it like being in the main heavy metal mag for the first time?
Wow, it was incredible. I mean, it was like a kid. I was like a kid in a sweet shop. It was amazing, a very exciting time. I mean, one minute you're in a rehearsal room in Bath where you live, you know, trying to bang out some tunes and sort of find your next meal, and suddenly you're in London with record company backing, and we were being basically groomed for the States, which is where we went, and we ended up playing baseball stadiums.
Well, I was going to say, what was it like doing the Rat support back then? Because I mean, they were big, but they got, while you were touring, they got massive, didn't they?
Yeah, well, we started on the tour and we were playing to kind of 15,000-20,000 seaters, and they went to number one while we were on the tour. The tour got upgraded to 45,000-50,000 seater baseball stadiums, the kind of stages where you had to run up a ramp to get onto the stage. So you run up the ramp and the audience are holding up lighters because they've already seen you on MTV, they've heard you on the radio, they love your single, and they're holding up lighters, and the whole auditorium is like daylight through the amount of lighters being held up. The shivers that go down your spine when you're running on that stage, somebody hands you a guitar and you crank into the first song, that's better than sex.
Well, that's it for our first show. Hope you liked it, or at least bits of it. Please tell us what you thought either way by going to the website at classicrockpodcast.com and either send us an email or phone the studio line where you can leave a message. We have a competition running this month where you can win a signed copy of Kiss's original guitarist Ace Frehley's Anomaly single off his last album. We've got three to give away. Again, just head for the website and click on the competition link. Also on the site, you'll find show notes for this podcast, which includes links to anything that was mentioned, including band sites and where to buy the stuff we talked about. All the music played in this podcast has been cleared for performance, publishing, and use of the original recording with the respective copyright owners. Special thanks then go to Frontiers Records, who put out the Jorn Dio album, and for allowing us to play the track from it, and everyone else who jumped to it at the last minute when we finally decided to get this thing off the ground. We'll be back on the first Monday of every month with more of the same, so subscribe on the site at classicrockpodcast.com or on iTunes to make sure you don't miss anything. See you next time.
Fuck you, classic rock and metal podcast.
Thanks, fellas.